good afternoon. I am sitting here this afternoon with Sean Levine, who is a writer and a creative writing teacher. So I'm just really interested, I suppose, before you start reading, why these two particular pieces, the Spur of the Moment Stroll and Passers-by? I mean, what led you to choose those two in?
Probably because it's what I'm interested in at the moment, right. which is linked to another course that I run about writing in the city, and I was looking for pieces that have to do with walking in the city. So there's a great Virginia Woolf story, and there's obviously Dickens's Night Walks, and then I came across one of these Kafka stories. Mm. And then, like, the next day I bumped into you or was introduced to you, and then you came up with the idea of reading something, and I thought, oh, okay, this great. Is what I'm interested in at the moment. So that's how I came to it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think I don't think we should really say too much about these stories, because I think there's something about getting them on the spur of the moment, literally, getting them fresh. So if you could perhaps read for us the Spur of the Moment Stroll.
When one has apparently made up one's mind to spend the evening at home and has donned one's house jacket and sat down at the lamplit table after supper to do the particular job or play the particular game, on completion of which one is in the habit of going to bed. When the weather out is so unpleasant as to make staying in the obvious choice. When one has been sitting quietly at the table for so long already that one's leaving must provoke general astonishment. When the stairwell is in any case in darkness and the street door locked. And when in spite of all this one stands up, suddenly ill at ease, changes one's coat, reappears immediately in street clothes, announces that one has to go out, and after a brief farewell does so, feeling that one has left behind one a degree of irritation equal to the abruptness with which one slammed the apartment door. When one then finds oneself in the street possessed of limbs that respond to the quite unexpected freedom one has procured for them, with out of the ordinary agility, when one, in the wake of this one decision, one feels capable deep down of taking any decision, when one realizes with a greater sense of significance than usual that one has, after all, more ability than one has need, easily to effect and endure the most rapid change. And when in this frame of mind one walks the long city streets, then for that evening one has stepped completely outside one's family, which veers into insubstantiality, while one's own person, rock solid, dark with definition, thighs thrusting rhythmically, assumes its true form. The whole experience is enhanced when at that late hour one looks up a friend to see how he is.
Thank you. So I think it might be worth also mentioning that, because some people listening won't have the text in front of them, that the whole story, apart from that last line, is essentially just one sentence.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just this when, this very rhythmical when, kind of building one when on top of the next.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of build up of somebody about to explode.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of routine that he's entrenched in. And it's like, it's almost like, I mean, it's not the same in German, but the kind of blowing of the w. It's almost like he's blowing up this balloon.
Yes, I like that. Yeah. Where, yes.
And then it's just going to, you know.
Yes, yes.
At some point it's going to explode, and then he has to have that full stop.
Yeah, I get that feeling as well.
Well, it's almost like he's this kind of, when is the imagining of the self walking? What happens if I get up? What happens if I do this? What happens if I leave the house? What happens if... And then that moment when he is walking suddenly he's kind of released from the Wen and he can walk. And then as soon as he walks, it's like he's just let go of everything that's been, you know, that's been holding him back, that's been about to kind of explode.
Mm. And what's your feeling in terms of the kind of, I suppose, the before and after? Because we have so little, we as the reader almost need to fill in some sense for ourselves of why he's kind of got ants in his pants. And then, of course, also why is he going out, or what happens, you know, what happens afterwards? I mean, what is the before for you, or is there no before? Does it just?
Well, the before is the decision to stay at home.
Right. Okay.
It's like, okay, I'm going to stay in this evening and work on my novel.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then those thoughts just build up. I've got to get out.
Mm.
You know? And what happens if you're like Kafka, having to write your novel at home, stuck between the living room and your parents' bedroom?
Yeah.
You know, and this kind of oppressive atmosphere at home, and he's just got to get out. And the before is the decision, okay, I'm going to sit at home, and I'm going to stay at home, basically.
Yes.
That's what the decision is.
Yeah. That sort of anxiety, that need to move, is that something that you also relate to? That sense of the body needing to be taken for a walk.
Yeah. And I think it's stronger when it comes, when the before is the decision not to move. And that's when you really want to go for a run.
Right.
You make this decision, okay, I'm going to just hang out at home and read a book. And then you kind of feel this thing building up.
Mm.
Maybe this would be a good time to go for a run, you know. I remember living in Tel Aviv and going for, you know, you go for a run at like 1 a.m. and it's still hot. Yeah. But that thing of when you decide not to go out, that's when the desire to go out.
And what's that about? Is it sort of the superego trying to impose something on the id and the ego and they kind of rebelling and saying,
yeah,
you know, as soon as you tell me what I'm not going to do,
I'm going to do it. Yeah.
Is it something like that?
Yeah, it's all... The thing is, it's all about... It feels like it's all about it and kind of this kind of... I'm an animal. I need to get out of my cage. You know, even if I put myself in the cage, I've got to get out of the cage. And then there's that lovely twist at the end where, okay, I'm out of the cage, but now I need company. That tale, which happens in a paragraph of 2 lines... Well, it kind of looks like this animal, you know, this big kind of id monster.
Well, particularly the thighs thrusting rhythmically.
Yeah.
That really jumped out for me. But you gave me this. This, by the way, is the J. Underwood translation. And I originally read this before you sent this to me. I originally read this in the Edwin and Willa Moore translation, which is the, you know, the ye olde Edwin and Willa, which most people... Well, it's the one that's online, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, you know, and there's quite a few differences. Like, in Willa and Edwin Moore...
Muir.
Is it Muir? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Muir. Okay, thank you. It is Muir. You're right. Willa, it's not Moore. Moore is like frankincense of Moore. Okay. Take two. So, in the Willa and Edwin Muir translation... This is how they've translated it, yeah? Well, you yourself, a firm, boldly drawn black figure, slapping yourself on the thigh.
Wow.
Slapping yourself on the thigh, grow to your true stature. Now, compare that to, while one's, again, the one rather than the you, while one's own person rock solid, dark with definition, thighs thrusting rhythmically, assumes its true form.
Mm.
I mean, very, very different.
And there's something more poetic in the Underwood. I mean, in the Muir, just that whole kind of hackneyed phrase of slapping your thighs just feels
slapping
a
yourself
bit,
on the thigh.
Yeah, feels a bit odd. And I mean, I don't understand German, but I was looking at the original, and just in terms of the words, you can see there's a lot of poetry happening there.
Mm.
And it feels like the Underwood kind of.
In the sense of thighs thrusting,
yeah,
rhythmically, you've got the
and you can feel the kind of,
yes,
you know, the kind of these bold strides.
Yeah. which is when you are walking and the body finally... There's that wonderful line, isn't there, where he talks about how... Which, again, is something I really identify with, because if I'm kind of got cabin fever, I've been cooped up all day, and I go out, you suddenly have that feeling where the body kind of relaxes when one then finds oneself in the street possessed of limbs that respond to the quite unexpected freedom one has procured for them without of the ordinary agility when in the wake of this one decision one feels capable deep down of taking, etc., etc.
Just such great use of the comma.
That release. Great use of the comma.
Mm. Yeah, the way he breaks up the breath. But I'm quite interested in that, the differences between the thighs thrusting rhythmically and the... Because there's something about the thighs thrusting rhythmically that you can almost feel the thighs. You can kind of feel the flesh of them kind of rubbing together.
Yeah.
And then there's this slapping of your own thighs, which is... almost this kind of external thing that's out of the flesh, and it's kind of slapping the flesh, kind of punishing the flesh, whereas in the underworlds it's kind of this complete reveling in the kind of fleshiness of the thighs.
Yes, kind of
rubbing together.
Exactly, it's more sensual, and yet there's something about the one in the underwood, which we're in the muir, it's you, that for me detracts from that sensuality. It actually feels more distant. It takes, again, you use that phrase, it takes you sort of out of yourself.
The one feels more playful, kind of playing with a higher register of telling, with a kind of more literary way of telling something. And it's almost like, because it's so much the I, let's pretend it's not the I and just call it one. Whereas the you makes it almost too close to the I. It's like, I know it's the I, because this is really my story, but I'm just going to call it one.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of makes the game that he's playing much more explicit and enables him to tell the story in the way he does. The you feels too close to the I.
That's really, yeah, that's interesting. Because it's true, it is a game. And particularly now, with all the baggage we bring to Kafka, that game is more prevalent, perhaps. Certainly more prevalent than it would have been for when Max Brod first read it. Or, you know. Now, let's just move to this last line, because this last line perplexes me. And sort of annoys me in the sense that it's interesting you refer to it as a paragraph in the sense that for you it actually is an intentional final ending, final paragraph of the story. For me, it feels unfinished. The whole experience is enhanced when at that late hour one looks up a friend to see how he is. And?
It feels more like the couplet at the end of the rhyming couplet at the end of a sonnet.
Right.
So
how does this tie in for you? I mean, you sort of mentioned earlier the sense that he's getting out, and yet when he gets out for his body, then he realizes he needs company. So for you, it's more about a relational need kind of kicking in.
I think it's interesting to look at it in terms of how he creates a story. It's like, what's on the page and what's that telling us about what the story is about. So there's this huge chunk of text that starts off with him in the house and then deciding to leave and leaving, and a lot of it has to do with family and being stuck in the tribe in a way. He's kind of drawing towards the end of that big chunk of paragraph. When one has stepped completely outside one's family, which veers into insubstantiality. So it's almost like I'm stepping outside. The main story is how I stepped outside of the tribe. And then it's like, okay, once I'm free of the tribe, I want to look for my friend. So the friend, it's almost like you have to choose between these two things, and the last bit of the friend doesn't need all this text to fill it up, because there's much more freedom, I think, is might be what he's saying. And then it would be a whole nother story, the complexity of friendship. And and maybe he just leaves it open because there's this kind of breathing space afterwards.
I mean, the other thing I was going to mention was that when I first read the story, the first time I read it was when you sent it to me a couple of weeks ago. But in the intervening time, I've been to a literary event at which you gave a reading of one of your stories, which is, it has affected the way I now read the story. So your story was essentially about cruising on Hampstead Heath. And
no, it was a story about love.
Via cruising on Hampstead Heath. Yes. And I sort of, now when I read the story, I get this feeling of, well, what is Kafka? Before I read it, yes, purely as a sort of escape story. But now I'm also reading it as a sense of, well, what is he going out for? Yes, what is he seeking?
Yeah.
Is it just escaping the family, or is it something else? Is it a search for adventure as well? And what is that adventure for this character?
That's not part of the story, though.
I know, but that's...
Yeah. I mean, in a way...
Is that not something you think about, though, in terms of where this character is going next? Doesn't it lead you...
No, no. All you want to think about is what he's managed to escape. After all this kind of... Okay, I've decided to sit home and do whatever I need to do, or play Monopoly with, you know, my niece and nephew, or I need to sit and watch television, or whatever. I need to write my novel, or... All these things that he's managed to escape from, that's the story.
Mm.
And then there's just this little, like, bonus point at the end. Okay, now I'm out. Now I want to go and see my friend. And actually, I'm not going to talk to you about my friend, because I'm going off to hang out with my friend, and I don't really need to tell that story.
Right, right.
You know, the story I need to tell is how I managed to escape the tribe.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, the way you talk about it with relish... It sounds like for you...
As one who hasn't escaped the tribe.
Well, I'm sure in some ways you have, whatever that tribe is. But it sounds like you see that escape as quite a contented escape, whereas I feel from the story that there's a momentary, but as he proceeds into the night, has he really... Is it possible, perhaps, to outwalk one's anxiety? Thighs thrusting rhythmically.
It's almost like there's a limit to how much he can actually thrust his thighs rhythmically.
Okay.
You know, it's like at some point you think, I need someone to hang out with. Okay, I'm not going to go back home, but I need someone to hang out with. And maybe that was always the excitement, especially in Tel Aviv, of going cruising. You know, that you go out, you like leave the house, you leave the work that's still undone, you leave... I used to watch a lot of Oprah on television. You kind of leave Oprah and you go out and you thrust your thighs rhythmically, literally. That's kind of the aim. And then at some point you think, I really want a friend to see how... to check how he's doing. And maybe... There's also a kind of projection in that. I want to hook up with a friend who's going to ask me how I'm doing as well.
Mm.
Maybe that's also what he's getting at.
Yeah, because when you're walking, the mind is churning. The mind is still churning, isn't it?
Mm.
And in a way, you can, although you can maybe giving to the body a sense of release, the mind can still somehow be still in that little cage. And the way I see it is that, you know, often we need other people to help us, release the mind, to let the mind kind of fly or settle or whatever.
Mm.
Good. All right. Well, shall we read the next even shorter story?
When you are walking along a street at night and a man visible from a long way off, because the street slopes up in front of you and the moon is full, comes running towards you, you don't go for him, even if he is a weakling dressed in rags, even if there is someone running after him and shouting, you let him run on. Because it is night and it is not your fault that the street slopes up in front of you, lit by the full moon, and anyway, perhaps the two of them have staged the chase for fun. Perhaps they are both after a third man. Perhaps the first is being pursued without cause. Perhaps the second is out to kill and you would become an accessory to murder. Perhaps the two men are ignorant of each other's existence and are simply running home to bed, each on his own initiative. Perhaps they are sleepwalking. Perhaps the first is armed. In any case, haven't you a right to be tired? Didn't you drink all that wine? You're happy not to be able to see the second one anymore, either.
Thank you.
God, it's fantastic.
So what is fantastic about this for you?
Well, I mean, what's fantastic is that he's doing something similar to what he's doing in the other one, is kind of recreating the experience in the way the piece is structured. So in this piece, there's these two chunks of paragraph and then this little paragraph at the end. So there's like the two men and him. And there's this experience of the first man, first paragraph, the second man, the second paragraph, and the third one is a short tail of a paragraph, and the second man has disappeared, and the story has disappeared, full stop.
Like magic, almost.
Like
a magic.
I'm telling
trick.
You, it's like
yeah.
magic. It is. What he's done is create magic. It's like the story ends where the experience ends. Like, you can almost turn and see this guy passing you and you can't see him anymore, and then you turn back and the story's gone. It's like, even on the page, there's like this gap that's left. You know?
So, I mean, the word that, you know, the previous story felt like it was being, the previous story is being sponsored by the word when. You know, when, that conditional end. And this one feels like it's being sponsored, being kind of the key word, of course, is perhaps. It's a story about the imagination, isn't it?
Yeah.
About, you know, perhaps it's this, perhaps it's that.
It's a kind of the what if thing.
Yes.
You know, what if the guy's armed? What if the guy, what if they're just staging this? What if the other one's chasing the other one? What if someone else is pursuing them?
Mm.
It's almost like all these scenarios that we create in our mind in order not to take action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order not to get up and leave the house and take responsibility for the evil that's happening in the world. That's kind of what the story is about.
So for you, it has a moral dimension, where I was sort of more reading it in terms of I sort of thought the character, because of course I believe that the character is always Kafka, which is always us as well. But my sense was this was Kafka walking along and he was thinking, okay, what can I do with these two guys? You know, like the way a writer would think, okay, this is interesting. I've been moved, I've been unsettled here by this guy running towards me and me not, and someone chasing him. What's going on? How can I turn this into a short story almost?
Yeah. Instead of take action and maybe save somebody's life.
Okay, because you actually think that the first chap is in danger.
It could be.
Right.
But if you just stand there and watch them run by, you think, fuck, what a relief. The second guy's disappeared. Now I really don't have to do anything because I can't even see them anymore.
So this is also sort of him letting himself off the hook with the, in any case, haven't you a right to be tired?
Yeah.
To drink all that? Okay, this is the letting himself off the hook kind of thing.
No, the letting himself off the hook is right at the end where the guy's disappeared. So obviously I can't do anything because I can't even see them.
Yeah.
Maybe they didn't even exist.
One line or a little section that, again, sort of perplexes and interests me with equal measure, and now that I've seen the two translations, perplexes me even more, is the part where he says, this man comes running towards you, and then he says, so this man comes running towards you, and then he says, you don't go for him. You mm-hmm. don't go for him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, that's how Underwood has translated it, which has all sorts of associations. And then, of course...
And the Moors?
And the Moors, or the Moors, the Moors, the Moors, as we would say in South Africa, just to give that little twist. They say, well, you don't catch hold of him. Now, there's a huge difference between catching hold of someone, going for someone. Going sounds like an attack, doesn't it?
Well, going for him is you need to move.
Yeah.
Catch hold of him feels much more... You just need to stay in your place and catch hold of him. Whereas the going for him is like you need to actually move and run towards him and grab him.
You don't go for him, even if he is a weakling dressed
yeah.
in
yeah.
bags.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So
it's like you can see that if you really wanted to take action, there would be no problem grabbing hold of him.
What is the taking action? Is this actually grabbing hold of him and beating him up?
No, it's like saying what you know. It's like when you see somebody fiddling with a bike.
Okay.
You know, and you.
But this ma- this
you
is the man who's being chased.
Yeah.
Why would you want to go for him? Well, why would Kafka even think of
you don't
going
know
for
yet
him?
That he's being chased.
Ah, okay.
At the moment, you just think he's running towards.
He's running towards you.
Yeah.
And then later,
even if he's a weakling dressed in rags, and
right.
then even if there's someone running after him and shouting, so. Someone's shouting and running after him. He might have stolen something. And you let him run on. You can see somebody fiddling with a bike, trying to steal a bike. Do you say to the guy, you know, is this your bike? Can I help you? Is there a problem? But you think, oh, I'll just walk on by.
I get all that, but it's just, and then you look to see the next part which says, because it is night and it is not your fault that the street slopes up in front of you. It just seems like a sort of a false logic in a way, because he's looking for reasons not to do this, and he's saying, because it is night, okay, I get that, and it is not your fault that the street slopes up in front of you. But who was saying it was your fault? I mean, who was accusing him of anything?
Well, the thing is, the story ends after the first paragraph.
Yeah.
You've let him run on. That's kind of the end of the story. But because he feels so guilty, he kind of needs to go back and start again and reassess what's happening and justify.
So there's
his
an implicit
inaction.
Accusation somewhere that
he's
feeling
guilty.
He's taking
yeah.
it on, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And then it's that thing of perhaps, 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 and it just gets madder and madder as he goes along. Perhaps the two men are ignorant of each other's existence and are simply running home to bed, each on his own initiative. Perhaps they are sleepwalking. Perhaps the first is armed. Perhaps they're sleepwalking. I mean, that's like, perhaps the first one is armed. It's like his justifications get crazier and crazier as he adds them on. And it is that thing when you're standing there and you're seeing something happening and you're trying to find ways of not intervening.
How do they talk to each other, these two pieces? I mean, they both are, as you said at the beginning of them, you know, people walking in the city.
Well, the one... It feels almost like the second one could fit into the first one. They're both part of the same story of what can happen when you leave the house. What happens when you leave your routine and the world you know? You're always being confronted with situations in which you can play a part in making things better.
Making things better.
You're always encountering situations in which you can have an impact.
Or that can also have an impact on you. Because it's interesting, your reading of that piece, of the second piece, seems to be much, much more, which is you bringing out more this sense of one's own person, rock solid, dark with definition, assuming its true form. I mean, I get that sense of your experience of this. Whereas my sense of it is the veering into inessentiality almost. That kind of almost that sort of nebulous sense that one, when one starts to program or think about all of these perhapses, you enter the realm of imagination and you almost, you're no longer a person situated in that street.
Well, you become a writer.
I suppose, yeah. I suppose.
As opposed to a human being.
Yes.
Yeah. Actually, if I stand here and don't do anything, I can just imagine stuff and write a story. So we don't have to take responsibility.
Yeah. So the material comes
it's
to
like,
us rather than
it's
us.
It's like we're going to write in Fortnum's tomorrow instead of occupying Fortnum's. But I think on some level that's what we do have to do as writers, is choose whether we want to give our energies to making change in the world, or whether we want to give our energies into creating something that we're driven to create. And I think at some point you have to ask yourself, do I really want to make changes in the world? Can I make changes in the world? And if you can't, then sit down and write. Don't worry about, should I be volunteering for this? Should I be demonstrating for that? Should I be, If you're not going to do that, then just sit down and write.